The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of Natural Bridges Media or KSQD's staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Welcome to What a Week, KSQD's Listener's Digest of all the news from this last week that you really need to know. I'm Tony Russomano.
And I'm Eric Nelson, and have we got a show for you.
Now, you can't be well informed unless you are informed well. And that's where What a Week comes in.
For the next hour, we're going to dive deep into what's been going on over the last 7 days, giving you a quick rundown of what's happening here in Santa Cruz and in the rest of the world.
And because sometimes you just want to get away from it all, we'll play you some music designed to soothe your soul and bring a smile to your face.
So turn up that radio, fire up that internet browser, and get ready for another edition of KSQD's What a Week.
This is really a three-mile island event for this industry. If renewable energy is going to be a future, it really needs to rest with safe energy. And I'm not going to rest and leave this until I know that we have a safe environment, a safe operation over in the Moss Landing area.
Paranoid Neil Young. I'm Eric Nelson.
And I'm Tony Russomano. I am Tony Russomano. Hello, hello. Can you hear me on the mic? Yes, we got you.
And, take it away, Tony.
Okay. So, we all know, big fire at Moss Landing. And it's still burning, or it's percolating, or it's doing something down there. So here, live in the studio, to fill us in on what's happening and what is going to happen in the future, we think, is our own state senator, John Laird, who represents the counties of Santa Cruz, San Benito, Monterey, and a good part of San Luis Obispo. And before John was a state senator, he had many other roles in local government, including the state assembly. He was a director of state resources under Governor Jerry Brown. And, of course, he was mayor of Santa Cruz for two terms. Welcome, John Laird.
Good to be here.
Thank you, John. Last time we saw you was on election night when you were celebrating, but nobody else was because you won re-election by a big, big margin. Now, you were in Moss Landing. Tell us, you know, as much as you can about what the current state of affairs is right now at that fire.
I haven't heard overnight, but it really broke out midday. Where are we? Midday Thursday. And basically, there's two battery storage plants there, each on different sides of a wall. On one side is Tesla and PG&E, which is essentially untouched. On the other side is Vistra, which is much larger, and probably between them, it's the largest battery storage plant in California. And the Vistra side is essentially destroyed. I think the number they were using yesterday was somewhere around 75% had burned. And if you see it, it's just down to whatever cement or metal were in walls and most of it. And for the uninitiated, that was a fossil fuel plant forever. And what happened was, is when it was decommissioned, eventually it became battery storage. And the old fossil fuel plant, the places that the trains came in and dumped oil to be burned, that whole area was just jammed with batteries. And then on that side, there's a new building that's battery storage that was added. It's a little in the back. And that building is the thing that appears to be relatively untouched. It was entirely the front by the smokestacks that...
The retrofitted building then.
Yes.
The one they put the batteries in to put in the space they had.
Yes.
Because that's, I wouldn't say necessarily reassuring, but it's at least the newer technology didn't go.
Well, the one thing about newer technology, and that's the center of this debate, is that the major part of that was constructed in 2017. And the technology at the time was the battery storage, but I don't want to say out in the open, but in a closed building next to each other. And the technology that has morphed and developed in California is to take containers and fully enclose the batteries in an enclosed container. I visited a Tesla battery site in Lathrop outside of Stockton. That's the technology they use. And so if it's that kind of technology, there's telemetry inside, they're spaced apart, a fire would burn itself out inside the container and not spread to others. And
but wouldn't a fire, though, generate gas? And if gas gets loaded up inside a closed building, that is explosions happen.
You know, up until Thursday, we were all experts on the election. Now we're all becoming experts
on
lithium
though.
Ion. So what we heard was that when these batteries burn, it releases lithium ion gas. So how could it be that the EPA came in and said, we're not detecting anything harmful?
Because if you talk to the air officials anecdotally, they say that the ions that come from that gas are lighter than the smoke and anything else and go straight up above the smoke and dissipate in the atmosphere. And that's why you have no detection at ground level of anything. But having said that, the underlying thing here is the sentiment you just expressed, is people are like, geez, we were told there was a fire suppression system, we were safe here, this is safe technology. You had a clip, I'm not sure it was acknowledged at the beginning of the show, from Supervisor Glenn Church, who represents this area and Northern Monterey County and the Monterey Board of Supervisors, and he's I was with him yesterday. He's hopping mad. He just feels like there were representations made, and here is this massive fire. And the questions about what the releases are, there's still work to be done to determine that the crops are totally safe in the surrounding area. And people have questions, and they can't readily be answered, and therefore there's a lack of trust, and just people are mad. And so, and yet, and let me acknowledge at the beginning of this discussion, this is awful. This is a disaster. This should have never happened. And the impacts on 1,500 displaced people and stuff into the air is awful. having, because we're going to have a discussion that might be more thoughtful, and I don't want anybody to not feel the urgency of all those things that have happened out of this disaster.
All right, so what goes up must come down. What happens when there is fallout, literally?
Well, the scientists say it dissipates in the atmosphere at those high levels.
It goes away? It's not
yes,
there anymore?
Yes, it's not going to drop down in a way that it would be felt. That's the statement, but I think it's not unlike 20 years ago, the light brown apple moss spraying here, where the scientists said it's a pheromone, it doesn't contain toxic chemicals. Nobody believed it until they would release exactly what was in it and they could understand it. The same thing is true here until there's just demonstrated science and it factually matches what's going on the ground. Nobody's going to believe it.
What about the otters and the egrets? I have to say that's a question, you know, the fact that this just happens to be located next to Elkhorn Slough. And again, it was a fossil fuel plant, so it's not like that neighborhood is strangers to pollutants and toxic things going in and out. But my first thought...
That leads to a greater discussion, which is an incident happened that pales compared to this one in September 2022. And when that incident happened, there were not these protocols to disclose to people outside the fence of the plant what was going on. And so I met with the Port District a month out, and the Port Commissioners and General Manager said, to this day, we have not had clear information about whether things have flowed into the harbor and that we should be worried. It turns out that there's a belief that nothing did at that time, but it wasn't disclosed in a timely fashion. There wasn't this coordination so that people in the moment could actually take action if action was needed to be taken. That's the reason that I did the bill.
But right now, Saturday, the question is, just being on the ground there, is there any danger to the otters and the egrets at Elkhorn Slough that could be anticipated? Any evidence that says that this could go south?
The representation is no.
But the representation was the plant wasn't going to blow up.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. There's been a loss of trust in this because of what was said before.
And Elon Musk's facility not getting zapped, of course.
Not this time.
I'm putting my tinfoil hat here right now. His spaceship, Starship, blew up the same week this is happening. Coincidence or conspiracy, I ask you, John.
I would say coincidence, but I have to live outside of Santa Cruz.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, this plant did have safety systems, in quotes, air quotes, right? And why weren't they sufficient? Well, KSBW talked to the fire chief down there and put the question to him. So I'm going to ask you to listen to what the chief said, how he described what he saw, and then get you to expand on it later.
Key phrase here, folk, thermal runway. I love that.
Runaway.
These particular batteries have a water injection system that is designed to cool the battery in the event that it overheats prior to it going into thermal runaway. So we've had other events. In each one of those events, that system worked as designed. It worked every time. It put that, or it cooled that battery enough to it wouldn't go into thermal runaway. Yesterday was a different event. We had more than one battery that was overheated at the same time. I could see evidence that there had been multiple batteries that were either burning or had burned at the same time. So whatever occurred there, was obviously a lot bigger than we'd ever seen. My theory, and it's only a theory because there hasn't been an investigation done, is that the thermal system that I'm talking about was overwhelmed. So whatever event happened was too much of that event. There was too much heat, and it overwhelmed that sprinkler system that it has. And the batteries caught fire, and it was off to the races.
And that's North Monterey County Fire Chief Mendoza. Now, the question then is, okay, so there were too many fires going on all at once. So how did that happen? Why were there so many fires? Why were so many battery packs overheating at the same time?
It's, to me, that's still unclear, except yesterday I talked to the technician or the technical manager on the ground who I know at Moss Landing, and he said they saw it all on video. and that the fire was just launching out of the first couple of batteries in a way that it just almost exploded out in a way that they hadn't seen before, and in a way consistent with what the fire chief just said, it's not ready. And there's an analogy in the news, and this could get us off on a 45-minute off-ramp, but the analogy in the news is the fire hydrant system in Pacific Palisades. It was not designed for being in 100% use of every single fire hydrant at the same time. That's not what it was designed for. And yet that was what it was put into in that fire. And it seems like, and it's early, they have to do investigation, it seems like the same thing was in play here. They had different ways they thought the fire system was going to knock it down, and the fire went in ways that that system didn't
anticipate. But the difference seems so highly unlikely that that multiple battery packs would overheat at the same time.
And unlike Pacific Palisades, which wasn't guaranteed safe and engineered to work, Pacific Palisades was, you know, it's not really a fair analogy. What happened was, quote-unquote, unprecedented. And listening to the press conference, the spokesperson for the company that put it in, vigorous investigation. We're going to get right to the bottom of this and figure out what happened. And then the next step is, okay, but while that's going on, what do we do?
It's not a fair analogy in the sense that the Palisades wasn't designed for entire conflagration, and the battery storage was. That's the way that analogy
But a safety mechanism
work.
Should assume the worst and be over-engineered to prevent disasters.
No question.
And
I think the first question is going to be, why wasn't that true?
Bingo.
Here?
And, yeah. You know, and it sounds like everyone is pulling in the right direction. I mean, it seems, can you give us an overview of the local authorities here? You've mentioned church. How are other people weighing in on this?
The central one is the one you played the clip from. It's Chief Mendoza, and he was the one when I was doing the bill on evacuation plans and safety and other things the year before last. He was the one that was the most knowledgeable and the most helped me in guiding things. And 2 years ago, when they had their incident, it was smoke, and it shut down the entire system, even though there wasn't the fire. I mean, that was the reason that people thought this is a system that works. It just went ahead and preemptively went way ahead of the situation and shut it down. And so and he was not in 2022 September when that happened. The fire chief, was not consulted in a major way and was in the dark, just as the Port District and other people were. This time he wasn't, but at the same time he's as baffled by everybody else at the sequence of events.
Now, it's known that, you know, you can't fight a lithium ion battery fire with water. So what other tools does the fire department have or could get, and why weren't they on hand?
Well, they are very limited. For example, in this crisis, on Friday or Thursday evening, CAL FIRE offered aerial stuff, water, and it's not consistent with the nature of the fire, and so they did not accept it.
That's why they didn't
do
it to Chernobyl. I want to dial back to yesterday. Brad Watson, who's the spokesperson, Vistra, I watched very closely. I speak fluent press conference and certainly fluent company spokesman. It seemed to me he was almost hiding, kept name-checking Mendoza. Well, you know, Mendoza said, and we thought Mendoza. He clearly, in my humble, Tony was laughing, opinion, was using Mendoza almost as a human shield. Well, you know, Mendoza said it was safe. It looked safe from our positioning. Did you detect any of that?
And but here's the distinction. This is why that was not fair to Chief Mendoza.
That's what I thought.
It's not fair because the company has responsibility for inside the fence. Chief Mendoza has the responsibility for outside the fence. And he has the responsibility for responding to their direction if there's a fire inside.
It was very much to me like Mendoza, well, he let us build it. You know, can't expect, you know, what can we say?
Here's the interesting thing, because I have a staff member who at the time that was permitted was on the Planning Commission. And when I was doing the bill, and I keep referring to the bill, Senate Bill 58 in 2023 that required evacuation plans, safety plans, coordination with local officials to try to deal with the situation exactly like this. It passed overwhelmingly.
It was signed into
law.
It worked?
Yeah, and because they were involved this time in a significant way. But now I'm forgetting where I was going
to
go.
Let me then ask a follow-up. I've been trying to get in here. Yeah. So what tools does a fire department have or should they have for lithium-ion fire? They show up at a fire like this. All they've got is water. Is there something else they could have on hand?
I'm a layperson, but it's my observation that your tools are in prevention, not in a full-on meltdown and disaster. It's trying to make sure the full-on meltdown and disaster never happens. If it happens, you have limited options, and it's exactly what they're doing here. Their decision is to let it burn out, that there are not major applications they can make to deal with the fire.
Okay. I mean, this is the Chernobyl thing. Once it started, they had to, bury it to keep it from burning any further. Again, I'm harping, I guess, because I'm not looking to the past. The past is evident. It happened. It burned up. Thank God you put the bill in that allowed smoothly for the evacuations we had. But when I see corporate spokesman, Brad Watson, dissembling and trying to put the heat literally and figuratively on Mendoza, and I'm curious, do you think they're going to rebuild now? Do you think they're just going to pack it in and leave or blame California environmentalists for not giving them the tools?
They're definitely not going to blame California environmentalists.
I blame you guys.
Or if they do, it will not be successful. The thing about it is it's what I was trying to say at the beginning. The technology has changed, and the technology has changed to much safer. And the energy, he needs to speak for himself, and I'm jumping ahead of what he said privately yesterday, but he said 75% of the technology is the new safer that has never had a reported major incident of any kind, and 25% is a technology that just blew up in Moss Landing, and his decision now is, do you put a halt or a pause on the 25%? Do you do a mandate switch out to the safer technology? They all made investments and penciled it out based on what the stuff was at the time. So the companies are going to have a real rough time having tens or hundreds of millions of dollars to switch technology after they already invested. And that brings it to your question, which is, what are they going to do? And I think it's much too early to tell, but I think my pressure would be, is if they do rebuild, they rebuild in the much safer way. But these are really open questions, and there were elected officials yesterday when the fire wasn't even 24 hours old were saying, are you going to rebuild? Are you going to commit not to rebuild? And it was just like, could we put the fire out right now? Could we make sure the evacuees are safe and can get back in? And then let's have that discussion.
Why don't we take a short musical break? John, can you stick around for a little bit? Because several zillion questions, I'm sure. And we have some other questions on other pressing concerns in Santa Cruz. This is What a Week. I'm Eric Nelson.
I'm Tony Russomano, and here with State Senator John Laird.
Well, you've got your diamonds, and you've got your pretty clothes, and the chauffeur drives your car. You let everybody know, but don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Your mother, she's an heiress, owns a block in St. John's Wood, and your father'd be there with her if he only could. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Thank you. took her diamonds and tiaras by the score. Now she gets her kicks in Stepney, not in Knightsbridge anymore. So don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Now you've got some diamonds, and you will have some others, but you better watch your step, girl, or start living with your mother. So don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. So don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
In another stuff.
We're here with John Laird. I'm Eric Nelson.
And I'm Tony Russomanno.
And we were listening to Sir Mick presciently talk about playing with fire. We're talking about the already, let's just say, certain Republican elected officials and commentators on Fox News are already starting to zero in on this as proof of the failure of the Green New Deal, in those just precise words. You see, this is what happens when you go to this loony battery technology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm curious, you know, you have the 360 view, John, of this whole industry, and certainly politicians and our Republican brethren. What would you say to the average Facebook poster who says, yeah, it's all because of the Green New Deal, AOC, you see, you see?
Well, that's just patently wrong and patently false. And California has been overwhelmingly successful in our efforts thus far to transition from fossil fuels, which are, I mean, here we're having the firestorms and winds 80 to 100 miles an hour in Los Angeles that triggered the fires, and scientists saying that, of course, climate change isn't responsible for the underlying winds. It's responsible for the intensity. And if you look at hurricanes off the Gulf of Mexico, while it's still named the Gulf of Mexico, the intensification of them is due to the warmer waters and is directly tied to climate change.
Facts, schmacks. Come on, you're just spouting that egghead scientist stuff.
So. You advance from that egghead scientist stuff to the response. And if you look at battery storage, the real issue is as we move to wind and solar, it's certain hours of the day, it's reliable based on what the wind or the sun is at a certain time, and battery storage is the thing that evens things out. If you were to walk into Moss Landing before the fire, it is now seamless. On days when the grid is down because it's overcast and not windy, out goes automatically battery storage energy to the grid. And on days when there's so much wind or so much sun, it comes in and it stores. It is the reason that we have a reliable grid. And if you looked at that day in September of 2022, where it was so hot everywhere in the West, and there were fires that were cutting into the grid for a period of hours. Battery storage put more electricity on the grid in California than Diablo Canyon. And it is a reason the grid did not go down in those hours. And when you looked at the discussion that was had to extend the life of Diablo Canyon by 5 years, that was at that same time. Since then, the energy that has been developed in California has exceeded some of the projections for this last 2 years. And one of the main reasons is battery storage. And so it is part of the overall solution, but it obviously has to be safe.
Well, Vistra didn't put this plant in as a charitable endeavor. They're a big, big American billion-dollar.
I was waiting for this.
You know, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think the idea that there's money to be made in environmental initiatives, despite the best future.
No, just ask Elon Musk.
Well, exactly, and that's going to be an interesting schism that'll have. I'm looking at my watch right now, but I would think that there's that. what's good for the environment can be good for business. And I'm curious, we can't predict the future, but is Vistra, how are they going to play with that? What's your instinct on this? Do you think Vistra's going to stay in the game here in Moss Landing, or are they just going to cut their losses and build in Texas?
I think it's early, but I believe that if they could answer the public's questions about safety, they will rebuild. And interestingly, right now, this is the biggest battery storage in California, but it is the only current installation Vistra has in California. They're a Texas-based company, and they are applying for one in Morro Bay, which is probably, let's just say, in deep trouble after the last 2 days.
It went to a vote, and the people in Morro Bay voted against having the plant. So the plant, Vistra, withdrew its application, if I'm correct on that, and went to the state because the rules the state has are much more lenient. And approving high density housing now. You know, the state laws are could preempt local laws. So there, the Vistra was essentially kicked out by the citizens, but they. Instead, they're going to try to get the state with more lenient laws to permit them to build in Moss Landing.
Just for the record, it was clear all the way along that the Energy Commission had the ultimate authority.
Sure.
All the way along it was clear, and clear to the locals. But the Energy Commission has to make sure it's safe. And there's a nuance to this one. The Coastal Commission has jurisdiction in this one. And I've already Zoomed with the Coastal Commission, and they have real concerns about the Morro Bay site that are unrelated to some of the concerns that the people had at the city level when they voted.
I'm curious, so they put that in there. I know there's an old facility in Morro Bay. I was just recently there, you know, one of those great WPA smokestack. Is that where they're thinking and basing it, or are they building?
It's post-WPA, but that place. And there's all these complexities in the sense that the people in Morro Bay wanted to keep the smokestacks up. There's even a Three Stacks coffee shop, and there's all this stuff where over time it's become a thing, and yet it cost millions to maintain, and Vistra had agreed to pay the cost of taking those down. And I don't know if that hangs in the balance here. And I'm not suggesting it should guide the outcome. It is just part of the complexity. They walk away, and I don't know if Morro Bay is stuck with this multi-million-dollar thing every year.
You bring up an interesting point, though, about the Coastal Commission, because here we have the Marine Sanctuary. So, are the federales going to be involved in this now, Mia, because it's a marine sanctuary issue, looking for pollution going out over the ocean?
Well, there's a thing, and I don't want to highlight it because I don't want any Trump administration people to be listening to this radio.
This is KSQD. Trust me. Zero chance of this happening.
And that is that the federal government actually delegates a lot of its coastal consistency to the State Coastal Commission. And so it really resides as much in the State Coastal Commission as with any federal agency.
Well, can we pivot here? And this is what we non-journalists, that would be me, consider an ambush. But when you were last here, we talked about runaway development. We talked about the buildings that are coming in, and you had some interesting thoughts on it. The juncture we seem to be in now is a whole bunch of more big boxes, I like to say Stalinist concrete toadstools, but that's being charitable in the design, are about to be approved and put in. And
this is when I always say, what do you really think?
That's never a problem with me.
Just wait.
But the thought is, though, and this is just a dumb question, so is that we already have a few that are up and running, right? They're built, they're up for rent. That before more of them are approved, that someone takes a step back and let's see, how are the ones that are already up and running doing? Who's renting them? How is parking working? Are they working the way that the law that allowed them in intended? Is there anything that could be done, any way to sort of at least take a deep breath, as they say, to sort of slow down before more of these things are approved?
Well, let's go back to where we were election night in this conversation. So that could be our push-off point. It partially set you off. But it's my view that when local zoning was sort of taken away or overridden to allow for these buildings. It was because cities and counties just weren't building enough housing. That was, and I am surprised when I came back into the Senate to find the whole political view of this had changed, that there were just substantial majorities in each House that want to override local control at most junctures. And now there's been these stringent numbers given for more housing, and it's called RENA, the regional whatever allocation, housing allocation. And 62/3 of the cities and counties have submitted plans on how they're going to meet these numbers. Santa Cruz is one of them. It's a housing city. And so my view is that if people are building housing at the city and county level, you should give local control back to them. Let them build the housing, but let it building on their terms. So that's a way of, the answer to your question is that we can't immediately rescind all these past things. And it is logical to say, let's see how it's working before people build the next. But all these things have been entitled. In essence,
if you don't want to see all the concrete Stalin's toadstools go up, it's too late. If it's been approved, there's nothing anyone can do. They're all going to be built simultaneously, and we'll just deal with the impact once they're finished.
If it is an entitled project, yes. If it's not an entitled project, it's still within the local jurisdiction.
I think these are all quote-unquote entitled projects, wouldn't you think, Ty?
I'm sure they are. Now, election night, you did say that you had plans for a bill that you were going to introduce.
Well, I want to lay the groundwork for it. And
is it called the Concrete Toadstool Act? I just want to know real quick.
It may be with you. Okay. and the thing is that I have been floating this in Sacramento, and I've been talking to people. I just talked to Scott Weiner about this idea last week.
I'm sorry.
The other interesting thing was that, much to my amazement, as somebody that's on as many committees as any senator, they added one. And so I am going to be on the local government committee this next session. And when the Senate president called and said, we want you on this committee, I said, well, I have this controversial view. Let me talk to you about it. And it was to express this. I said, if I'm on the local government committee and we're doing these local government overrides, here's the direction I want to go. And you might wish to choose not to put me on the committee if you have concerns with that. He says, no, more power to you. Go on that committee. Express that. So I think this is, you asked about a bill. I think this is a multi-year process. This is about, because 1/3 of the cities and counties haven't fully committed to build their housing yet. And it's really convincing the majority in the legislature that supports overriding local thing that there's a reason and a basis that demonstrates that people are building housing and we should do this. And so this is going to be a multi-year.
Well, couldn't Santa Cruz be used as a case study in all of this? Which is why I keep harping on that. They've already built a bunch of them. Can't we see how they're working and if they're addressing the problem?
It's funny because the mayor either heard the radio show or heard me say it somewhere else and said, are you going to do a bill this year? And I said, the question is back at you, which is how do you demonstrate that you are meeting the needs over time that are in these things? And if you could do it, I'm willing to run with it.
The city council considered that and eventually decided, and I think the mayor said this, that no, the city council is going to leave it up to the owners of the building or the rental agents to essentially police their tenants and make sure that people are working in this area. The housing is going for local workers and not for people commuting.
I'm just curious if things like rental, like how many people have moved in? What is the rent? Where are the cars being parked? Just very practical questions.
Well, are getting to the major issues that are being discussed at the state level. Because at the state level, let's take the two you just mentioned. First one is parking. There have been bills to relieve housing projects of the parking requirement because there's a belief among the advocates for more housing that that's been historically used to block the construction of housing.
Yep.
And so they want to do that. Then you turn around to when I did the town hall meeting right by the town clock at the condo complex on that potentially 18 or 10 story building. They said, we don't get it. We had to provide parking. They don't have to provide parking. Look at where this is. That's just going to overwhelm everything in the universe. And it is very logical. They should have to provide some measure of power of parking. But they have been relieved of this in some ways by these state discussions that's been used to block housing. So that's the nature of the discussion. And it's one of those things like, how do you make sure that housing isn't used as a wedge to block housing? How do you make sure there's enough parking in what housing goes in to meet the needs of where it is? And then you get to the second issue you raised about rentals and affordability. And that drives me crazy, because when I was in the assembly, we held up the Senate and the governor for an affordable housing ballot measure. They didn't want to do it. In the big Schwarzenegger bond package, we said, you don't have affordable housing in there, we don't approve your other bonds. And it leveraged this bond that led to 50 or 100,000 more units of affordable housing, because you could put state money in and subsidize, subsidize the affordability that was necessary in the housing. That doesn't exist now. So what the state has done is they do these density bonuses where you allow people to have a much higher density in a building, and then the trade is they have to provide a certain percent of affordable housing, as opposed to getting a direct subsidy to do
it. But again, the question, again, it's a simple question that has a complex answer, is in the case of Santa Cruz with this, there's a growing opposition to these things. They've already built enough of them that they can adequately see, are they working or not, before they commit to building more. It seems to be, I know I'm a layman here, but I don't understand.
No, you're being logical.
But the thing is, what's about to happen in our community is, I fear these things will all be put up. They'll start crumbling into disrepair for the fact that they're being built fast, and there's really not a market for them. And by the time people figure out that they were just built for the most venal reasons, it's going to be too late, and no one's going to want to tear them down.
The real question is, setting finality aside, is what's the affordability of the 80% of the units that are not affordable? Who moves into them, and is that really dent the housing market?
And can't they see that and take a deep breath ones that are there?
Let me tell you what they see.
Yeah.
What they see is there's this argument at the state level that the real problem is the 3 million unit shortage of housing, and you just have to build endless housing. And even if you build it so there's a significant chunk at the upper market level, that somehow it's going to be a trickle down theory, and housing will
be created. We know how well that's always worked.
Well, yeah, if it's really 3 million and last year they built 110,000 units, it's like, that's not, and I've always thought in Santa Cruz, if you make the argument that you just build more, it's going to affect housing prices. I just don't think in this market that works over time.
Let me ask my own dumb question. Why do the new buildings have to be so damn ugly?
What you'd say is ugly is in the eye of the beholder, and
what I would say is that when you do by right, those are exactly the things that local planning commissions and city councils used to talk about. And at the state level, among the housing advocates, they believe those are used to block housing. And so that's why they do by right. And that's why they don't do the same level of review on design that existed before the by right things were in place.
Well, we have the three Santas, and we're not talking Claus here. There's Santa Fe, Santa Barbara, and hopefully Santa Cruz. And if you think of the commonalities, both Santa Barbara, Santa Fe had some sense of aesthetics and said, you know, if we're going to be building, we should try to keep it together, because there's a certain essence we have here. It's good for business. It's good for tourism. Let's keep it the way it is. Let's not build anything, but at least have some vague idea of what we're building and how it fits and what it looks like in the city that contains it. And what I see you're saying, and I can understand it, is that's conflicting with a lot of different agendas in Sacramento. And Santa Cruz, unfortunately, is ground zero for impact. And in my ever humble opinion, in 10 years, someone will say, how did this happen? And it's going to be too late.
It's true. And the if you go back, I mean, one of the things that changed the whole housing situation was the federal government pulling out in the Reagan years and never coming back. If you look at the Blaine Street housing by the jail, there's different places where there was real subsidy for multi-unit housing in Santa Cruz, and it made all the difference. I mean, there were 700 units of affordable housing constructed in the 9 years I was on the city council, and it was constructed in part because there were funding sources that do not exist anymore. And in the ideal world, we'd have the federal government coming back in and helping us subsidize that. And for example, when the St. George was rebuilt after the earthquake right downtown where the bookshop is and everything, there were these federal subsidies that allowed them. We exacted affordability at some level of 40 or 45%. It was in the process of expiring, and there's been a big fight to make sure it continues because it's been 30 years or whatever it is since then. But that allowed us to have the St. George it addresses your question, allow the St. George to be in the design standard that was close to the way it was before the earthquake, more Mediterranean and consistent with downtown Santa Cruz.
But the thing is, times have changed, the laws, and, you know, it's just we're in this kind of vortex of despair, which leads me to a broader national question now. And just personally, I don't know if you know this, but Monday, it's not just Martin Luther King's birthday on Monday.
I'm aware of what else is happening.
Yeah, how are you getting through it? What are your plans?
I'm going to march on Martin Luther King Day and be at the march instead of... I can only think of one time in history I haven't watched an inauguration before, and it was 8 years ago. So...
Well, interesting, though, the move internally. You know, there's been speculation as to all of a sudden the move and the idea that Trump is worried because... Oh, he's so concerned about his MAGA fans freezing. Well, I seem to remember a lot of heat stroke victims over the summer. Care and concern towards his fellow citizens does not strike me. So I'm just curious why he did move it indoors.
He moved it in. Well, it's interesting you should say
this
that.
This is what he wanted more than anything.
Well, no,
there's a sea of red hats out there.
The forecast is 19 degrees with a wind chill that takes it down a bit. And I attended... The one inauguration I attended was Clinton's second. I was at the convention and an electoral college voter. I had a good seat. John came with me. When we picked up our tickets, it was 1 degree on Capitol Mall, and it was a balmy 26 degrees for the thing. And so this is 7 degrees below that. And this wind chill must be dramatic because I don't understand. The odd thing, for an anecdote, as a Californian, is so I was dressed in an overcoat, all these layers. I had a Russian hat on that could make me really warm, and I had gloves. And so whenever Clinton did something where you'd applaud, the response was from the crowd was thump, 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 because everybody is wearing gloves, and I'm a Californian.
Did you have gloves like Bernie had for one of the...
They weren't as artful as that meme.
Well, sometimes, though, the easiest explanation, what does he put, $200 million in inauguration donations for the thing? So what does he do? He moves it inside the rotunda, builds a plywood stage on it, takes over one facility... So we can all see a Lee Greenwood and maybe a surprise appearance by Ted Nugent, and pockets the remaining $199.5 million in inauguration. Sometimes the easiest explanation of what the move was
well,
that.
It could be, but a lot of it is events that will be in the evening that will still
go on. Oh, I understand. I'm being facetious here.
You know,
but the great thing about Trump is no matter how you make stuff up and go for wild, crazy, harebrained ideas, it's usually closer than, say, Meet the Press. You know, we're not too far off.
Well, let me tell you an interesting anecdote, and that is, as I was approached by two Republican state senators that said, we're sort of on the outs, can you help us get inauguration tickets? and I worked with Jimmy Panetta, and one of them is the senator from Bakersfield, who we disagree on almost anything, but I really like her, and I play with her in public a lot. And Kevin McCarthy wanted her to run for his seat. And when he was announcing, he called her and he said, okay, got to go down to the clerk tomorrow morning. And she said, well, I'd really like to talk to my husband. And when she talked to the husband, she called him back the next day and said, I'm not running. And it was on the last day of filing. And so then it led to that situation where the guy was on the ballot for both the Assembly and Congress. And she ended up endorsing his opponent against Kevin McCarthy. So she's so on the outs that she needed to have a Democrat help her get tickets to the United. And she is as conservative on the issues as they come.
Well, Charles Pierce, a writer we quote often, writes for Esquire's quote on this and sort of reflects my doom and gloom. History is playing a joke on us all, a prank that echoes through the sad history of the last decade of American politics. Maybe Trump could dress up with a buffalo head hat and a spear. He could hand out zip ties as souvenirs. The rules of vandals have triumphed. The Capitol Rotunda, recently graced by the memorial service for Jimmy Carter, is now doing business as a train carriage in France, and Monday is May 22nd, 1940. So that kind of expresses the theme of this. And
I appreciate that, but I think don't waste the energy now. We have so much we're about to have to fight. Let's
then
fight
go for
about
that.
That.
What is that? So you're right. Yeah, you're cheerful, not cheerful thoughts, but positive optimism, because that is what we need to do. 100%
yes.
Accurate.
Oh, no, and I don't disparage that, per se. It's
wallowing grief's okay occasionally, but I agree. What now?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I've done all these interviews about how do we prepare. And one of the things is there's lots of ways to prepare, but we're not 100% sure which way everyone will come down. And I was preparing on offshore oil, and then Biden just changed the whole game board by moving everything off limits. And so rather than having to deal with an immediate executive order to start the process for offshore oil drilling, now they're going to have to go through a couple of years of legal process to see if they can even undo it. And so it changes what the underlying facts are in addressing that issue. And so I know we don't want them to roll back California's environmental waivers. We want to move to more universal coverage and health care, and don't want to roll back. We don't want to do massive deportations. I could go down the list.
What about that deportations? Again, they're not listening. I don't think Stephen Miller listens to KSQD regularly. But if they target...
His father was a UCSC student when
uh-oh.
I was.
Well, no wonder he's turned curdled into what he is today.
Yeah.
But say they... If I were them, to me, a prime target to own the libs, cruelty is the point, let's go get them, like they're about to do in Chicago, is our own Santa Cruz. And with our population... Are there plans on deck, or is there an immediate, because this is what I would
do. There have been lots of discussions, and one of the reasons we're about to appropriate money to the Attorney General is a lot of the ability is to take legal action to deal with things that are outside the law on the deportations.
Because when the cyber trucks roll in, the black cyber trucks with the death's head flag, as they are going to do, remember, optics are very important with these people.
Well, you know, I haven't been mayor in 35 years, but when I was mayor, it was then called the INS. It was before ICE. They came into Beach Flats and busted up a milk line and chased people into houses and tried to do all the stuff. And our police didn't know. Our police get these calls and they show up with guns drawn, not realizing it's federal agents busting up a milk line. And so Leon Panetta, who was our member of Congress, worked out a special agreement that they had to notify our police before they ever came into town to do it. And they were furious about it. They felt like that was like an unnecessarily impediment. We'll just be working on all that kind of stuff as this happens.
Yeah. John, you have been an enlightened voice for us and for our listeners. Thank you so much for coming by and giving us the deep dish on what happened at Moss Landing, what may be the future for battery power in California and the United States, what's going on with housing, what's happening with the new administration. You are a font of knowledge, and we're so lucky to have you as our
thank
elected
you so
representative.
Much.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And I'll leave us all, though, with some good news. Did Tony, you or John, do you see the photograph, the too-good-to-be-true picture on the Palisades fire, which is utter Dresden-like desolation.
Oh, the magic bus.
And a magic bus. There's a blue.
Yes.
And they actually did research, because I saw that thing immediately, of course, posted it saying, oh, and my little heart went pit-a-pat. What a great symbol. That is too good to be true. Guess what? It isn't too good to be true. But they did track it down. They literally did photogrammetry satellite photography, an outfit called...
This was a blue Volkswagen van, right?
Yes, yeah. The blue Volkswagen van forget the name of the publication that did it, but they basically took and found a satellite picture of it, and then they looked at the side of the van that faced the houses, and it had the scorch marks. So that little plucky 1977 VW van that is the symbol of California.
It really?
The real
deal. Over Smokey the Bear, we got a new symbol. Uh-huh.
It is not fake news. Well, we started at the very beginning with Neil Young, as we like to get back, and that was Burned, a song from 1966. So it was his first
that
album.
That was about the year the Volkswagen bus was manufactured.
Absolutely.
That I had in college.
Absolutely. But Neil Young, so that was him at the start of his career writing a song that he didn't know we'd be playing on the radio about the Moss Landing fire. This came out last week. This is Neil Young, brand new music from Neil Young, and it's about, well, I think Neil, I don't know what, Neil's pretty straightforward here. I think it's called Big Change, and it's about exactly that. You're listening to KSQD Santa Cruz, KSQD Pruntail. I'm Eric Nelson.
And I'm Tony Russomano.
And Neil Young's going to take us out. We'll be back, I'll be back with Wallace Bain next week. Tony is going to be down south, and I think we can count on a major fire wherever you're going, so report back. And we're here with Wallace Bain, but right now, I'll leave you with Neil Young.